It's the show for UFC fans across the globe. This is Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. 3, 2, 1.
Happy Easter. This is episode 61 of Ultimate Fighting Weekly. My name is Chris Toplak. Thanks for joining me. I survived a possible chocolate overdose to be here with you. Those mini eggs are killer, my friends. And I push my limits, I'm not going to lie. And I'll probably do it again tonight. On this edition of the program, on that note, by the way, a recap of the Ultimate Fighter Nation's finale along with UFC on Fox 11, which took place last night. Rich Franklin wants the trilogy fight against Silva. I'll let you know which one, by the way. Jones speaks out against a former rival. GSP wants to star in an upcoming film and predictions for UFC 172. Let's get to the weekly recap.
The UFC Weekly Recap.
Whether you celebrate Easter or not, the very least you can do is indulge in the food, right? I consumed so much spinach dip yesterday, I actually had to turn down the majority of my dinner, which is something I'm not known to do, especially when ribs or chicken are in front of me. I mean, my diet consists of probably 78% meat, right? So at least I took care of that. I was thinking, you know what, all the fixins, leave them be. I went way overboard with chocolate eggs and spinach dip. But you know what? That's okay. I'll get back to regular shape on Monday or another couple of weeks. I'm not going to turn down food. Are you crazy? Now, the Tough Nations finale flew completely under the radar, which is disappointing because it was actually a well-put-together card. The turnout was relatively low at the Coliseum Quebec, I believe it's called. Only 5,000 in attendance. Again, very lackluster. For a card that from top to bottom didn't really have a lot of disappointments at all, especially when it came to the actual fight. So, for the bonus awards, fight of the night was Dustin Poirier and Akira Korasani. Performance of the night, KJ Nunes and Ryan Jimmo. Just to revisit that prelim card there, Ryan Jimmo came out like a wrecking ball. I like what he's doing because he has been known in the past to fight a little bit too much like a robot. I mean, he's consistent, but he's not the most exciting fighter. Well, you know what? He's put the kibosh on that because he had that 7-second knockout. Now he's had this within the first round as well, two over Sean O'Connell. Sarah Kaufman was victorious over Leslie Smith. I forgot to mention this on the previous edition of the program. Leslie Smith took this fight on 8 days' notice. So I would love to see what she can do with a full training camp. I'm sure they're going to invite her back for another shot inside the UFC organization. So Sarah Kaufman, what's next for her? I'll tell you more about that perhaps after I recap UFC on Fox 11. Yeah, something coincides there. And in the welterweight division, KJ Nunes made short work of London, Ontario's own Sam Stout within the first 30 seconds via KO. And if you missed it, submission of the night goes to Sam Stout for his dazed guillotine choke on the referee. It was a bizarre scenario. So KJ Nunes clips him. It was pretty much done after a few shots landed on the ground. And Sam Stout was so out of it that he locked the referee in a guillotine choke. The referee actually taps out. I don't even know if I think he was just probably doing it to think, you know what, Sam probably believes that this is the opponent. I'm just going to tap out and he'll automatically stop, right? It's probably what he would naturally do. So it was tough to see that from Sam. He's never been knocked out before. Very durable fighter, known for his granite chin, but he got caught there. And KJ Nunes comes from an extensive boxing background, so this doesn't come as a huge surprise, but puts KJ Nunes back on the map. As for Sam Stout, still that gatekeeper. You know, he'll win one, he'll lose one, he'll win one, he'll lose one, but because he puts on so many exciting performances, I can't foresee the UFC cutting him. I know that Dana White has been outspoken and said, listen, I love Sam Stout, I'm going to keep him around. Of course, I'm in agreement of that. I'm a London boy myself, but still, he's got to just keep evolving, you know? I know that Joe Rogan gives him hell on the microphone, and you know what? He can justify it a little bit because Sam Stout goes in there, you know, he's well-rounded. As a kickboxer, he's outstanding, but I don't see a lot from his wrestling game or his jiu-jitsu game. I think, you know, he just needs to kind of step up and just pick up some more tools along the way, or at least perfect them, right? Or come as close as he can. So, very disappointing there for the London, Ontario native. But what can you do? So, on the main card, I should say, in the featherweight division, I was so happy I could catch this fight. Dustin Poirier over Akira Korasani via TKO. I predicted by submission. That's okay. I'm telling you, Dustin Poirier, watch out for this kid. I've had my eyes on him for a couple of years in terms of his performances. I think he has a ton of potential. I think a lot of it is still untapped. As for Korasani, he was just outmatched in this fight. I don't think it worked in his favor whatsoever. I still think he's a little bit green and nervous when it comes to his career. I mean, he's been known for some great judo. His striking's not bad. I mean, he stood toe-to-toe with Dustin Poirier, but still, Poirier is just too well-rounded. The right guy won the fight. Also, in the welterweight division, it was Chad Laprise who won. He's a London, Ontario native as well, too. Gave a shout-out to my boy Faisal. So if Faisal's listening, I'll give you a shout-out as well, too. Prominent doctor around the London, Ontario area here. So great guy. Supporter of Ultimate Fighting Weekly as well, too. So Chad won the fight by split decision. Narrow thin there. So what can you do? In the middleweight division there, Sheldon Westcott looked completely unmotivated, completely lost in there. Lost to Ilias Theodoro. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. Now, I am guilty as charged for not really following the Ultimate Fighter Nations Canada versus Australia season. For reasons completely out of my control, by the way. Not because I didn't want to tune in. I just got super busy with work. It was tough on a Wednesday evening. But yeah, I mean, Ilias looked amazing in that fight. So kudos to him. Won via TKO with some punches and some elbows there. In the welterweight division, Patrick Cote fighting in his home province. He defeated Kyle Noak via unanimous decision. It was the right call. I saw some on Twitter that were saying, no, Noak was the clear-cut winner. I disagree. Cote did enough to win. Both of them eating huge shots. So that was actually a great fight. And the main event of the evening, I won a full five rounds, was Tim Kennedy, as I mentioned, smothering Michael Bisping for those five rounds and winning by unanimous decision. Now, Tim Kennedy's approach to the game is not exactly pretty. More so, it's gritty. You know, he'll take you down, he'll hold you down, he'll work some of his top game. He'll try and lock in a submission, or on the feet, he's pretty well-rounded too. So Kennedy definitely puts himself ahead in the rankings. As for Bisping, I think that's the last of his run. I really do believe that now he's on the complete downswing of his career. I have a lot of respect for Michael Bisping. He's generated a lot of attention, a lot of money, but that's about it for him. What can he do from here? He just lost to, I believe, who was ranked the number 6 or 7 guy. Bisping is lucky to be ranked in the top 10 at this point. So very unfortunate, but I mean, what can you do? So I think Bisping, his career is coming to the end. And of course, he had that major eye surgery as well, too. I think he had a detached retina. Recovering from that is not fun. He was out for nearly a year. Knock on wood that he actually escaped this fight injury-free. So overall, it was a decent card. Again, it was kind of disappointing, the fact that only 5,029 people attended this card. If I was in the area, I totally would have gone. I think it was well put together. And of course, not everything can be a pay-per-view caliber card, right? That's why it's on free television. But the next one that I'm going to be talking about, because since we're done with that, was UFC on Fox 11. Now, that was a pay-per-view quality card, in my humble opinion. I don't know how it would have drawn or the numbers it would have pulled in. But nevertheless, I enjoyed this one, too. 17,000 attended the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida. Total gate was $1.65 million. And kudos to the UFC for putting on such an entertaining card on free television. It was actually the Fox executives that asked for this main event, which kind of surprised me, by the way. So nevertheless, great card. And a shout-out to all of my friends and fellow journalists and fellow publications down in the Florida area. There's a lot of great folks down there who I tend to follow as well, too. They support me. I support them. It's a mutual respect. So looking at the card, and by the way, before I get to anything, to let you know about the bonus awards, fight of the night was Thiago Alves returning after being gone for, 2 years against Seth Pazinski. And performance of the night was Donald Cerrone and Alex White. Yes, Donald Cerrone continues to be pound for pound the most exciting fighter in the entire UFC organization. Bold statement, but he always backs that up. So going to the prelim card there, yes, Alex White had a spectacular performance. He won via TKO. That's kind of, I guess, would have been his knockout of the night. But in the lightweight division, it was Jorge Masvidal over Pat Healy via unanimous decision. Pat Healy has now dropped 3 in a row. He had a victory over Jim Miller that was overturned due to testing positive for marijuana. Very disappointing. I suspect Pat Healy will be cut after this recent loss. That's my prediction. It's just what I'm calling. In the welterweight division, as I mentioned, the returning Thiago Alves. He trains at ATT in Coconut Creek, Florida. It was good to see him come back. 2 years. He was formerly an elite welterweight. Will he get back there? I hope so. And he looked a lot leaner in this fight. And of course, a lot of that is due to Mike Dolce and his conditioning and, of course, his lifestyle as well, too. I mean, those cookbooks are wonderful. So, defeated Seth Pazinski by unanimous decision. Actually, he set the record for the most leg kicks in a three-round fight. I think it was 61, somewhere along those lines. But yeah, he set the record. So Forrest Griffin, I believe, previously had the record, but now it's Thiago Alves. So good for him for mixing it up as well, too. He has some great kicks. He has some great stand-up. And he's a tough guy to take down. I think it was Luke Thomas, who, of course, is associated with MMAfighting.com, mentioned that Thiago Alves is a tough individual to take down, which makes GSP's performance against him so outstanding, because GSP took him down at will. Thiago Alves is a difficult fighter to take down and especially hold down. Also, in the lightweight division, it main evented the prelim card. It was Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. And Khabib won by unanimous decision. It wasn't pretty, but it got the job done. Now, the one complaint about Khabib Nurmagomedov, I just love saying the last name because there's not many like it, is that while he has been undefeated in the UFC and undefeated in his entire MMA career, really he only finished a few opponents. But at the same time, see, I don't know if you should be able to throw that at him, because I believe now he's 6-0 in the UFC. Won his first fight by, I believe, a rear naked choke. Also won a fight over Thiago Tavares, if I'm correct, by punches and elbows. So you know what? He's been fine. I don't see the big deal. You know, who I would match him up against would be TJ Grant. Make that a number one contendership belt for the lightweight division. What do you think about that? I like it. I've seen that thrown out there. I was right on top of it immediately, too, and thought Khabib and TJ Grant, make it happen. Joe Silva or Sean Shelby or whoever wants to make that happen. So I dig it. On the main card, it was in the middleweight division. It was Yoel Romero, also known as Joel Romero. So he defeated Brad Tavares in a great performance via unanimous decision. He's won four in a row, and he's looked absolutely dominant while doing so. Silver medalist in wrestling, which boggles my mind. I completely forget about that most times to talk about him, because I tend to focus on his stand-up game, which is vicious. He's so powerful. He's muscular, but also kind of more of a lean muscular. I believe he's 5'11", so he fits in perfectly in that middleweight division. A few more victories, and I believe he could be ready for a title opportunity, really. Because, you know, a lot of people talk about the depth in that division. I disagree. I still believe there's a little bit of a lack of depth in it. Not so much with Anderson being gone, but just the fact that, who do you have lined up against Chris Weidman? So you have Machida, you might have Belfort. Who do you have after that, right? I mean, Yoel Romero, he's got to be climbing up the rankings at this point. So now that he's in the top 10, give him some big opponents and see what he can do. See if he can hang with the big boys. In the lightweight division, it was Donald Cowboy Cerrone defeating Edson Barboza via rear naked choke. Wow. Unbelievable fight. I'm surprised that did not get fight of the night, because Edson came out swinging. He was going to end this in a hurry. And I was actually a little bit concerned for Cerrone. I was thinking, wow, Edson wants to end this just in the first minute. I think he just wants to make this quick and just wants to get this over with, because Cerrone gets stronger as the fight goes on in a lot of cases. If he's mentally, you know, in line, he will do so. So he remained patient. He was landing some good combinations eventually. And all it took was a huge left jab. Caught him with a left jab, dropped him, and man, he locked in that rear naked choke quicker than a fat kid at a buffet. Have you seen how they move? They move really quickly. Looks are deceptive, my friends, because Donald just jumped, took his back, locked it in. All had to have taken place within 5 seconds. It was like within the blink of an eye, and he got the rear naked choke victory. So good for Donald Cerrone. Again, I will say it. I say it all the time. Pound for pound, the most exciting fighter in the entire UFC organization. No doubt about it. I mean, some would say Carlos Condit or the Diaz brothers or some of them. No, consistently, it's got to be Donald Cowboy Cerrone. So kudos to him. Most finishes, I believe, also in the lightweight division history, time with Nate Diaz, and that's including the WEC as well. I believe it's 12. Wow. Unreal. In the women's bantamweight division, it was Miesha Tate defeating Liz Carmouche via unanimous decision. It was the right call. Anybody that disagrees with that, go back and watch the fight. Liz definitely won that first round. But with those takedowns, did absolutely nothing. So I was mentioning on Twitter, often it's not the number of takedowns, it's the number of effective takedowns. It's what you do with them. So when you look at the fighters like the George St. Pierre, it's such a prime example, I can't avoid it. George would take you down, but they were effective takedowns. He would take you down impressively. He would control you with his top game. He'd move around a lot, control the positions, land shots all along the way. That's what you have to do, is remain active on the ground, control the situation. Liz would take her down, rest, hold her against the cage. And I'm thinking, you're not doing anything, so don't count these. It also reminded me of Johnny Hendricks against Carlos Condit, one of their fights as well, too. I forget which one it was at, which pay-per-view exactly. I think it was 153, perhaps. Anyway, same kind of deal. You can't just hold a fighter down and do nothing and expect to win the round. Unfortunately, for Misha, Liz did win that first round. Misha came back. It was the second half of that second round where she really turned it on. Won that round, and that third one, absolutely dominant, nearly locking in a rear naked choke, in an arm bar a few times. She kept going for the Kimura as well as she was standing up with her back against the cage. So great performance from Misha Tate. I read a great article, I believe it was on BleacherReport.com, just stating that Misha Tate is the perennial gatekeeper of the women's bantamweight division. Not that it's a knock on her, and I can understand where this writer or journalist is coming from, because Misha Tate is tough as nails. You get through her, you're ready for Ronda Rousey. I mean, case in point, Katsangano, right? So Misha definitely won that fight. I see no controversy there. I watched it. I rewatched it. She won. Kudos to Misha. I'm a fan of her. Shows a lot of heart and determination. So there's a lot of male fighters in the rest of even the women's bantamweight division that can take note of how to turn it up in the later rounds. Problem, I mentioned this to a good friend of mine, is that too many fighters that I've been witnessing recently, Misha being one of them, guilty as charged, is that when you are coming out of that first round, the feeling out process is gone. It's a thing of the past. You can't do it. You give up that round. You're already at a disadvantage. You can't do that anymore. So I'm glad that Misha was able to turn it up and win the fight. In the heavyweight division, and by the way, I was so far perfect with my predictions until we got to the heavyweight division. Fabricio Werdum defeated Travis Brown via unanimous decision. Travis looked absolutely out of it. He was lost. I don't know what happened. There are claims as well that he broke one of his hands in the fight, so perhaps that's not why, or perhaps that was why he was not throwing some serious leather. I'm not sure. But in that first round, I was actually thinking, okay, this is going to be Travis. He's landing some big shots here, but you know, Werdum ate them, eventually took him to the ground in the first two rounds, but Brown survived. So kudos first and foremost to surviving Werdum on the ground. Not many can stake that claim, right? Huge. So Brown on the feet, though, is getting lit up from Werdum. Now, Werdum is by no means a knockout artist. I don't think he can knock out many fighters unless he has somebody in the clinch with those knees. I mean, then totally. But he was just lighting him up with some great combinations. He was getting a little bit cocky, playing into it a little bit, and doing a backflip off the ground or kind of like a nip up. And so very entertaining. So Werdum definitely won that fight. There's no doubt about it. Travis Brown looked completely unmotivated. It proved that he's not ready yet. Keyword yet. He will be ready. I think he needs another couple of victories to get himself back into contention. But I mean, one cannot overlook the victories that he's had as of late. So Werdum is now 4-0 since returning to the UFC. Kudos to him. And here's my prediction. Takes on Cain Velasquez in Mexico, and it's just not even going to be competitive. Cain Velasquez is on a completely different level. I mentioned this to my dad weeks ago because he's a Cain Velasquez fan, and I was mentioning that what's going to stop Cain Velasquez will be himself, his injuries, and the fact that he's just going to wear himself down, and mentally he might just check out because he's just such a talent, so on another level. So much the same way of the Georges of the world and the Rondas of the world, nobody's going to touch him. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be Werdum and Cain in the fall or early winter if things go according to plan. So either way, both of those were outstanding events. And also on top of that, I just want to mention really quickly, I did watch The Ultimate Fighter Season 19, the first episode, Team Edgar, Team Penn. I'm going to try and watch this season if I can. So it airs every Wednesday. I believe it's 10 o'clock if you want to tune into that one. And as we continue on, Rich Franklin was recently asked on a radio show if he would entertain the thought of fighting Anderson for a third time. Here's the question. Very simple, by the way. Would I fight Anderson a third time? Absolutely. It is because I feel like I have some unfinished business? Not at all. It's just in my mind as a champion and to have the mentality of a champion, I 100% wholeheartedly believe that I can beat Anderson in a fight. Sorry, Rich, I got to disagree with you there, boy. Those first two fights, absolutely dominated by one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time. So I wouldn't want to see Rich in a third fight against Anderson Silva. I mean, it would be fun on paper. I think it would be a good draw on pay-per-view as a co-main event. But aside from that, I don't see the results being any different. John Jones spoke out against his former rival, and I guess now current rival still, Alexander Gustafsson, who, by the way, is next in line for a title opportunity against the winner of John Jones, Glover Teixeira. I'll get to that shortly. Here's what he had to say. I respected him a lot more before we fought. Tell you what, he has so much arrogance for someone who didn't win. I find it funny because Gustafsson lost the fight fair and square. I will admit he won the first and third round, but that's it. I won the fight. I've never heard someone chirp so much who lost. I could see if I poked him in the eye and the fight had to be stopped, or I caught him with a big punch while he was winning and it was a fluke or something, but it was nothing like that. He needs to close his mouth and go back to the drawing board and humbly come back for a second chance. Now, John Jones and his his outspokenness and his arrogance is well documented. He's a very polarizing figure, but I have to agree 100% with John Jones in the statement. He won the fight fair and square. He won the second, fourth, being the key was that fourth round, and the fifth round. He won the fight fair and square. I was there live to witness it at the ACC UFC 165. I rewatched it, I believe, three times. He won the fight. No controversy. Let's move on. But Gustafsson definitely deserves the rematch, being that the fight was so close and because it was just so darn exciting, too. Come on. Who doesn't want to see it again, right? I'm going to see a lack of hands. Speaking with TMZ, and George Rush St. Pierre has had some weird talks with TMZ, because TMZ in the past was reporting that it was his dad who was dying and all these, and he had a girl pregnant, and none of this seemed to be true, but it looked like George was talking to them and telling them, you know what, I want to play a villain in different movies. I want to be a feature villain, because he actually was a villain in Captain America, which is in theaters. He only was on screen for about 10 minutes, but I hear he did a pretty good job, although he spoke most in French, so it's not a huge stretch there. But here's what he had to say. Maybe not superhero, but I like the Star Wars movies. I'm a big fan. I know they're doing sequels, 7, 8, 9. And he was saying that he would want to play a villain because they're more charismatic. So he'd rather play the bad guy than the hero in some of the upcoming Star Wars films. And you know what? I'm happy to hear this, because George St. Pierre is a hell of a human being. Rarely do you hear anybody say anything bad about him. You speak ill of George, you better have some substance behind it. And most often than not, nobody does. So I would love to see him get into films, stay away from fighting. Two blown ACLs is pretty much a sign that you just got to move on.
Predictions.
UFC 172 takes place live this coming Saturday, April the 26th, at the Baltimore Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm envious to those going. I nearly got tickets. A lot going on in my life at this time that just keeps me busy for the most part. Nothing serious, but really wanted to be there, couldn't. I have a few friends going, so they're going to give me the full report when they get back. This event features an outstanding card from top to bottom, by the way. So really looking forward to it. Even on the prelim card, by the way, Joseph Benavidez versus Tim Elliott's on there. Takanori Gomi. I can't believe that Danny Castillo and Charlie Brenneman. So all the way down on the UFC Fight Pass prelim card. Disappointing, by the way. But what can you do? Joe Ellenberger waiting for an opponent. He's got a week. Don't know who's going to step up in that short amount of time. But anyway, we'll get to that in a little bit. So let's get to the main card in the featherweight division. Max Holloway taking on Andre Tachi Feely, arguably one of the best nicknames in all of MMA. Love it. Feely, he's 13-1. He made his UFC debut at UFC 166 in a fight that he took on 2 weeks' notice. So that's how he caught my attention initially. And he won via TKO. I was very impressed with his wide variety of striking. He also comes from Team Alpha Male. That makes a difference for me. At 22, Holloway, he's one of the youngest fighters on the entire roster. He's 4-3 in the UFC. He's coming off a knockout of the night performance over Will Chope at UFC Fight Night 34. He's very crafty. I like him a lot. But while I haven't seen a lot from Feely, siding with him based on his well-rounded abilities in the training camp with Team Alpha Male, I told you, it makes a huge difference. So I've got Andre Tachi Feely via TKO. I just love saying that. In the lightweight division, the veteran, Jim Miller, versus Yancy Medeiros. Bobby Green was Miller's original opponent, but he suffered an injury, I believe, yesterday. It was April 19th that forced him off the card. So really, really short notice there. And Yancy was promoted to the main card. His original opponent was Joe Ellenberger, who is the brother of Jake Ellenberger. So Joe now seeks an opponent with 1 week to go. I don't know how they're even going to salvage this. So poor guy. He's going to be waiting in the wings, anticipating somebody there, and they might say, sorry, brother, we got nothing for you. Oh, man. So Miller holds a 12-3 and one no-contest record inside the octagon. So if you get past Jim Miller, you are honestly ready for the top contenders. I mean, yes, he has kind of like a gatekeeper status attached to him, but that's by no means an insult as well, though, too. I mean, you look at the losses, and I guess before the overturned drug test, it would have been Pat Healy, who, I mean, he's fallen on some hard times as of late, but he looked great in that performance. And I mean, past that, who else? I think it was Ben Henderson. Oh, yeah, he also had Nate Diaz as well. So I think he may have actually lost four fights, for all we know. I don't know, but there you go. So, hey, I do this entire show from memory, by the way. So impressive for the most part, but nevertheless, Miller has only lost to top-notch opponents, so give him a lot of credit where credit is due. And as for Yancy, he has a one loss and one no contest inside the octagon. His victory over Eve Edwards at Fight for the Troops 3 was actually overturned. He tested positive for marijuana. Whether you agree or disagree, you can't test positive. So there you go. And, you know, rarely do I ever bet against the ever-so-crafty Jim Miller, and I don't plan on doing so again, so I've got Miller via submission. That's what I'm going with. In the middleweight division, it's the former Strikeforce champ Luke Rockhold taking on Tim the Barbarian Boach. So Rockhold rebounded over his heartbreaking KO by the hands of Belfort, or the feet of Belfort, we should say. And he actually rebounded with a knockout of the night performance over Kostas Filipou. So looking to get back in the win column. He's looking to be motivated. He actually called out Vitor, I want the rematch. Well, he's got to prove himself a little bit more before he gets that opportunity. Meanwhile, Tim Boach could easily be on a three-fight losing skid, but he received the generous split decision victory, courtesy of the judges at UFC 166 against CB Dolloway. Did he deserve it? No, my humble opinion. But still, his last performance was technically a victory. So Rockhold, I believe, has a ton of potential still and a great deal to prove since his loss to Belfort. I've got him via unanimous decision. Tim Boach is very tough. I don't know if he's going to be finished. In the lightweight division, it is the co-main event of the evening. It's Phil Davis taking on the returning Anthony Rumble Johnson. So Davis is riding a three-fight winning streak. Some could argue that with his victory over Lyoto Machida. I can understand that. That was a very close fight. While Johnson returns to the octagon after going 6-0 outside of the organization. Was it against top-notch competition? Not exactly, but still going 6-0, I believe, does justify being brought back to the UFC. So if you recall, Johnson was initially cut after failing to make weight on three separate occasions. Now, this kind of spanned it over the course of many years, but still, I mean, you miss three times, you should be done, right? Even more remarkable, he spent his entire UFC career at welterweight. That's 170. He now returns at light heavyweight. 35-pound difference. Yes, long overdue, if you ask me. So I don't know how he ever competed at welterweight. It's insanity. But naturally, at light heavyweight, I believe that's a good fit for him. So Anthony Johnson, vicious knockout artist. Well, Phil Davis is one of the division's most elite grapplers. So really, it's only going to go one of two ways. It's going to be contested on the feet, where I believe undoubtedly that Johnson has the advantage, because, I mean, Phil Davis is not a bad striker, but needs a lot of improving. Phil Davis could take this to the ground and just control it. That's what I foresee happening. Davis getting the fight to the ground, where he smothers Johnson with his suffocating top game. I've got a Phil Davis via unanimous decision in the co-main event in the light heavyweight division. Jeez. Wow, John Jones cut a lot of weight for this fight. Champion John Jones taking on Glover Teixeira. Let me first get something off my chest, folks. The UFC has been positioning Glover as the most technically sound fighter Jones has ever competed against. I completely disagree with the statement. Completely disagree. Machida, Belfort, Gustafson, all more technically sound. If you want to debate it, if you want to argue that, that's completely fine. That's the way I see it. I know that Joe Rogan's been kind of shoving it down our throats along with the UFC marketing, but Glover is not the most technically sound and most dangerous fighter Jones has ever faced. Come on now. Now, I mean, Glover is 5-0 in the UFC, but he has done so against lesser competition. Some would say, well, Rampage and Ryan Bader are not lesser competition. Yes, they are. Sorry. With all due respect, he earned a title shot after defeating the number 9 ranked fighter, Ryan Bader, who really dropped off the map. So what's the point of the rankings then if he defeated number 9 and he gets an immediate title shot after that? Come on. Doesn't make sense at all. As for Jones, he's technically 13-1 in the UFC, but let's be honest, the Matt Hamill loss should have been a DQ. Kind of pathetic. Back on topic, Jones has looked virtually unbeatable except for his previous outing. He competed against Alexander Gustafsson, and arguably the best fight in UFC history. I witnessed this fight live. Jones did enough to win 3-2. It was the fourth round that sealed the deal. So before any controversy talk comes up, he won, period. End of story. Do I believe Glover Teixeira is a legitimate top 10 light heavyweight? Absolutely. Top 5, though, I'm still not convinced. I'm not sold on Glover Teixeira yet. I believe it's still far too early. Yes, he's well-rounded. He's riding quite the winning streak as well. But the hype train is premature and it will be derailed this coming Saturday. John Jones will come out motivated and eager to prove that he is head and shoulders above the rest of the contenders. I'll make another bold prediction. He will win by TKO, setting up a rematch against Gustafsson in Sweden. That's what I'm calling right there. So to recap my predictions, John Jones via TKO. Got that going on. Phil Davis via unanimous decision. Rockhold via unanimous decision. Jim Miller via submission, and Andre Tachifili via TKO as well. So, wow, I mean, we didn't have a lot of breaks in this show, just kind of pumped forward, moved forward. So I really appreciate you tuning in for yet another edition of the program. I want to say something very heartfelt. I won't get too heartfelt and too sappy and sound like a Hallmark card, but I really appreciate all of the support for Ultimate Fighting Weekly. The next big step is bringing on some sponsorships, so that's what I'm kind of working on at this point. We've been growing rapidly every single week, and I believe that some sponsors will want to jump on and support this program. I want to give a shout-out to an old friend of mine. I still consider him a friend after all these years. His name is Emil Delic. He gave me one of the best compliments I've heard when it came to this show, and believe me, it's all very humbling. I've heard a lot of very positive feedback, and he was saying that he's associated with some shows elsewhere, and these are professionally produced shows, and he's saying that he enjoys this one more. So, I mean, Emil, one of the best compliments I've ever received in regards to the show, and of course the production value, and I really, really appreciate that. So thank you very much for all of the support of the program. Let's keep it going. Let's share it. Let's like it. Let's retweet it. Let's do anything that we can to get more listeners tuning in on a weekly basis. So until next week, and I can't wait for UFC 172, my friends. Enjoy your UFC action and take care.
This has been Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Toplak or at ChrisToplak.com. And visit MMASucka.com for a new show every Sunday.